from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 88. Lord Shiva, say from Brikashura, text number 5.
Harihe Nirguna Sakshat. Purusha Prakrte Para. Sa sarva drigupadrasta tamba jan nirguno bhavet.
Supreme Lord Hari.
He.
Indeed. Nirguna. Untouched by the material modes. Sakshat. Absolutely.
Purusha.
The personality of Godhead. Prakriti. To material nature. Para. Transcendental. Saha. He. Sarva. Everything. Drik. Seeing. Upadrasta, the witness. Tam, him. Bhajan, by worshipping. Nirgunaha, free from the material modes. Bhavet, one becomes. Translation. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. Purport. Lord Vishnu is situated in his own transcendental position beyond the material energy. Why, therefore, should his worship bear the fruit of material opulence? The real fruit of worshipping Lord Vishnu is transcendental knowledge. Thus, Lord Vishnu's worshipper gains the eye of transcendental knowledge instead of being blinded by mundane assets. The Lord, being the detached witness of the material creation, his devotee also becomes aloof from the interaction of the Lord's inferior energies. Srila Sridhar Swami cites the following passage from the Vedic literature. Vastuno guna sambandhe rupa dvayam mihesyate taradama yoga yoga bhyam bimbavat patti bimbavat. When the Absolute Reality associates with the modes of nature, he assumes two different kinds of form in this world, according to whether his spiritual qualities are manifest or not. Thus he acts just like a reflection and its further secondary reflection. Gunaha satpadaya sandha ghoda mudha sabhavata Vishnu Brahma Sivanam Jaguna Yantre Swarupinam. The modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, whose individual natures are peaceful, violent and foolish, are personally regulated by Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva respectively.
Nati Bedha Bhavid Bedha Guna Dharma Rihamsataha Sadvasya Sancha no Jato Vishnu Vikshepa Mudate.
Lord Vishnu's peaceful mode of goodness does not differ substantially from his original spiritual qualities, although it is only a partial manifestation of them within this world. Thus, Lord Vishnu's mode of goodness is never tainted by agitation in passion or delusion in ignorance.
Rajastamo ghanabhyam tu bhavetam brahma rudrayo Gunapamadata Bhuyas Antadam Sanam Chabhinata.
By the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, the original spiritual qualities of Lord Brahma and Lord Rudra are obscured. Thus, these spiritual qualities appear only partially as separated material qualities.
Attaha samagra sattvasya Vishnu moksha kadimati amsato bhuti hitascha tatananda maiswataha.
Therefore, focusing one's consciousness upon Lord Vishnu, the embodiment of all goodness, leads one to liberation. Such God consciousness also generates material success as a byproduct, but its proper nature is pure spiritual ecstasy.
Aham satas taratam yena brahmarudhadi sevinam vibhuttayo bhavanjeva sanaramakshopyam pyanam satam.
According to their mode of worship, devotees of Brahma, Rudra and other demigods obtain the limited success of material opulences. Eventually, they may, possibly, become qualified for full liberation. This same idea is echoed in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23.
Sriyam si tatra kalu sattvatano nrinam shu.
Of these three, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form or the quality of goodness. Translation again. Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. So, in the previous chapter, the Vedas personified, presented that of the primary features of this absolute truth which are worshipped, Bhagavan, Paramatma and Brahman, the Bhagavan feature is the topmost. So that was presented very clearly in the by the Vedas personified. In other words, the ultimate goal of the Vedas is bhakti or devotional service to Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Vedas very logically, very conclusively, very reasonably establish that fact by refuting any other possible argument. In this way, the individual living entities are very, very clearly understood to be the eternal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the conclusion of the Vedas. And any other philosophy, any nuance of any other conclusion was completely smashed and defeated very soundly, very philosophically, which left for anyone who could actually follow the logical arguments, it would leave no doubts whatsoever that we are the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifest his other features of Paramatma and Bhagavan. But he is the original and the supreme manifestation of Godhead. So now, in this chapter, of the secondary forms of worship of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, it will be established that amongst those three, Lord Vishnu is again the supreme. So this is the mood of this chapter. Understanding the mood of this chapter, of course, then one can relish this story and derive so much more benefit and realization from that. There are many different stories actually in the various Puranas and the Ramayana and the Vedic literatures which actually describe in a similar vein how Lord Shiva is actually subordinate to the feature of Vishnu and is in fact a devotee of Lord Vishnu. And this is very, very clearly established in this verse. But, Hare Krishna, is that word? Actually, there is, from time immemorial, there is always a quarrel going on between the worshippers of Lord Vishnu and the worshippers of Lord Shiva. And going on to this very day as to who is supreme. And this chapter very, very clearly in this pastime it establishes that Vishnu is the most worthy, supreme worthy object of worship. Whereas Lord Shiva is a secondary object of worship. We see here that there are very clear distinctions made between the situation of Lord Vishnu and the situation of Lord Shiva. In this verse is describing here that Lord Vishnu, and it uses the word however. In other words, this verse is comparing with the previous two verses which stated the position of Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva is touched by the modes of material nature. And therefore, in fact, Srila Prabhupada states in several places in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam that actually Lord Shiva is a product of the material energy. So, his followers, by worshipping the various forms of Lord Shiva, they also are worshipping, in essence, a representation of the material energy, and what they get is material results. And those material results generally all sorts of material results which satisfy the mind. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada, in his very concise way of cutting to the chase, he describes that ultimately all the various things that satisfy the mind really giving pleasure to the tongue and the genitals. There's a whole material world full of so much wonderful things for the mind, but when it all gets down to it, if the tongue and the genitals are not satisfied, happiness is usually not achieved. So these are the various benefits, sense gratification. Generally, the difference of the result by worshipping Lord Shiva, one gets material opulence. Even though Lord Shiva himself lives in some sort of poverty, but the worshippers of Lord Shiva or other demigods, they get some sort of material opulence. Whereas Lord Vishnu, who is the husband of the goddess of fortune, his worshippers generally don't. Not that they always don't. They sometimes, as a byproduct of worship of Lord Vishnu, they do get material opulence. But the primary result that they get is transcendental knowledge, which awards them full understanding of how to execute the highest principles of religion, to become detached and renounced from the material world, and to ultimately attain liberation from the material world, which means liberation from the mind, the false ego, sense gratification, like that. So there's a very real difference there between the worshippers of Lord Shiva and the worshippers of Lord Vishnu. Another major difference, of course, is that the worshippers of Lord Vishnu, because they are elevated to a transcendental platform, then they become free from the afflictions of the material energy, and instead they enjoy blissful pastimes with Vishnu, or with Krishna in his original form. But in this particular chapter we see that because Lord Shiva is touched by the modes of material nature, then not only he but his followers also become implicated in the problems of material life. So you see that here Lord Shiva ends up running for his life, and we see that also, you know, his various followers also become implicated. So even Lord Shiva is becoming implicated because of his contact with the material energy, where he's fleeing in fear of his life. You'll never find that pastime with Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. So you know, these are huge differences which are pointed out very, very clearly in this chapter. And yet the Shivites, they cannot understand that Vishnu is supreme and that Lord Shiva is a subordinate feature of Lord Vishnu. They cannot understand it. So where does that confusion come from? The confusion comes from the fact that in many places in the Vedas, it actually describes that because Lord Vishnu incarnates as the three guna avatars, Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness, Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance, and Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion. Therefore, we find the statements, because they're actually incarnations of Lord Vishnu, they are in one sense described to be one. And therefore, it's actually not wrong to say that Lord Shiva is supreme, because he is non-different from Vishnu. So therefore, this is one of the sources of confusion you will actually see in different Vedic literatures, where it describes how Lord Shiva is supreme. So those who do not fully understand Vedic literature, they take those statements and put too much emphasis on it. So yes, Lord Vishnu is supreme, but here and in all Vedic literatures it always describes that Lord Shiva's position is inferior to Lord Vishnu, because Lord Vishnu is never ever touched by the modes of material nature, whereas Lord Shiva is touched by the modes of material nature. Apart from that, the Vedic literatures have also analysed the various transcendental attributes of the Supreme Lord, of the Absolute Truth, and they have seen that within the presence of Lord Krishna, within Lord Krishna, there are 64 principal transcendental attributes. Now, of those 64 transcendental attributes, Lord Vishnu manifests 93%. So, Lord Vishnu is understood to be a subordinate feature of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu, of course, we refer to the Paramatma or the Super Soul. Vishnu, as the Super Soul, is either in the form of Mahavishnu, the Super Soul of the entire material energy, or Garbhadakshat Vishnu, the Super Soul of the universe, and also the Super Soul in the heart of Lord Brahma. Or Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, the Super Soul within the heart of the other living entities and within each and every atom. But Vishnu means the Super Soul. So he has 93% of the transcendental attributes which are there in the Absolute Truth. But Krishna has 100%. And of those 93% that Lord Vishnu has, he doesn't have them to the same full degree which are manifest within Krishna. Now, Lord Shiva, he has 86% of these transcendental attributes. So, again, he is a subordinate feature of Lord Vishnu. And the living entities, they have 78% of these 64 transcendental attributes that are there in the Absolute Truth. Now, Lord Brahma, who represents the highest perfection that the living entity attains within the material world, he has those 78% transcendental attributes, qualities, as far as the jiva or living entity is able to manifest them. And the various other demigods have them to lesser degrees, and down to, you know, various other living entities have them less and less. So in this way, the Vedic literatures very carefully analyse the situation of Krishna, Vishnu, Shiva and Jiva and Brahma. And in this way, it's understood that Krishna is supreme, and then there is Narayan, then there is Vishnu, then there is Shiva, then there is Brahma, then the Jivas, like this. Brahma, of course, is the Jiva also, but he is very qualified. So there is, when we hear the statements, therefore, from the Vedic scriptures that Lord Shiva is supreme, it is not incorrect to take that statement. But he is supreme with 86% of the transcendental qualities. Lord Vishnu is supreme, he is more supreme, with 93% of the transcendental attributes. And Krishna is the supreme supreme. With, so it's Krishna and the Supremes. Should be a rock band. So Krishna is 100% with those transcendental attributes in full, like this. So it is not wrong to say that Lord Shiva is supreme. But at the same time, the Vedic literatures, as well as pointing out that he is non-different from Vishnu. He is non-different from Vishnu because he is not a jiva. He is not jiva-tattva. So therefore he is non-different from Vishnu. But at the same time, although he is non-different from Vishnu, he is slightly different from Vishnu in the sense that he is touched by the associated with the material energy, whereas Lord Vishnu is never associated with the material energy. So that is a big difference. So therefore in the Brahma Samhita it is given the example that if we take milk and we add some other agent, and the milk becomes transformed and then it becomes yogurt. So it is the same as milk, but it is different. You cannot use yogurt in the same place as milk. You can utilize milk, and by various transformations you can get all the benefits you want from yogurt, milk, butter, curd, you know, all those different things. But you can't do that with yogurt. Yogurt has a specific use only. It has a more limited use. So in this way, yes, Lord Shiva is supreme, but he is Vishnu Tattva in a transformed manner because of his association with the material energy. And therefore there is a vast difference as well. Now, another source of confusion that is seen within the Vedic literatures, not to those who understand the Vedic literatures, but to those who don't actually accept Vedic literature within the Parampara system. Misguided people, they also may read various pastimes where Lord Shiva is actually offered worship. For instance, in the Ramayana, there is a situation where Lord Ram offers worship to Lord Shiva. And previously I was speaking to some boys from the Shiva temple, and they were quoting that particular fact to prove that Lord Shiva is supreme. As we just said, there are many, many different statements in the Vedic literature, and we cannot just take one statement out of context or one pastime out of context and say there is nothing else to be heard, there is nothing else to be known, there is one statement there and that will do. Forget the rest of the Vedic literatures, even though they say something else. Even though the Vedic literatures give so many ways by which Vishnu is supreme, untouched by the material qualities, 86% of the transcendental attributes, 93, and Lord Shiva has less and is touched. Let's forget all of that. There's a pastime in the Ramayana where Ram worships Lord Shiva. That's all. That's conclusive proof. The rest of the Vedas. So they want to take Vedic evidence. Here is Vedic evidence, but they don't want to take the other Vedic evidence. Now the fact is that actually in Valmiki's Ramayana, this story is not presented. It's actually a later edition. There are a couple of editions of the Ramayana, and according to the Valmiki Ramayana, the authorised Ramayana, that actually pastime is not presented. Now, even if we accept the later pastime which is presented there in the Ramayana, we should still understand it in its proper context. And that is, of course, that Lord Ram, out of etiquette, he is presenting himself to Lord Shiva that I am one of your devotees as well, and you have another devotee, Lord, Ravana. So of course, Ravana has offered you worship. I will offer you better worship than what was offered by Ravana, and I will take your permission to kill your devotee. So it is an etiquette. For instance, sometimes a child may be in an educational institution. Now, although parents have a say, generally we understand that the headmaster and the teachers, they have the real authority. And really the parents are allowed to have a say, but the teachers are the ones who, you know, officially have the authority. But still, naturally, they may ask the parents, I want to chastise your child. You see? So, as a course of etiquette, these things may be there. But then if we take a look at the Ramayana, there are certainly these stories of, you know, Bricka and Tripura and Ravana. You know, so many different stories are there in the Ramayana, which actually certainly glorify Lord Shiva. But if you take the Ramayana as a whole, you know, the very title, it's not the Shivayana, it's the Ramayana. It's the glories of Ram. He is the principal supreme character. You know, if you read the whole Ramayana, it's about the glories of Lord Ram as the supreme, non-different from Narayana, non-different from Vishnu. Shiva certainly gets a mention within the Ramayana, but he is not the focus of worship. The most worthy person of worship within the Ramayana is definitely Lord Ram. To take a secondary character from the Ramayana and just one little incident and say, therefore, although it appears to everyone else, the obvious person who is supremely worshipable in this book is Ram, to us, from, you know, from our limited perspective, we will forget everything else. We'll forget all the other chapters. We'll forget all the glories of Ram. There's only one little pastime to be taken note of in this Ramayana, and that is where Ram worships Lord Shiva. No more to be said. This is the mentality. So, in this way, because there are statements within the Vedic literature that Lord Shiva is supreme, sometimes we see that, for instance, you know, Parashuram, various forms of Vishnu may offer some, you know, out of etiquette, some worship to Lord Shiva. This may be confusing to those who do not understand the proper context, but to others it is very clearly stated that Lord Vishnu is supreme. So, one of the reasons, of course, that Lord Shiva is that Lord Vishnu is very, very kind to Lord Shiva, because actually Lord Shiva, in his constitutional spiritual position, he is actually the greatest Vaishnava, and Lord Vishnu will not tolerate any offences against Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is so dear to Lord Vishnu. Any offences against Lord Shiva are taken very, very seriously by Lord Vishnu, because Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnava. In his original spiritual position, he is a Mahabhagavat Vaishnava devotee who is empowered, along with his other work of taking charge of the mode of ignorance, and those in the mode of ignorance, and the material energy as a whole, his other work, which is completely overlooked by most Shivites, is that he is empowered to actually award elevated taste for pure devotional service to those to the Vaishnavas. That is a very, very important service. Lord Vishnu himself states, actually, again, the Vedic literatures, there are many statements where, in the Padma Purana, it states in the Padma Purana that the supreme worshipable personality within the material world is Lord Vishnu, and none of the demigods, neither Shiva or Brahma or others, ever go against this principle, as a statement of Padma Purana. Again, in the Rig Veda, it is described that the ultimate object of worship is the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, and this is accepted by all demigods. So these statements are there, very, very clear within the but also you'll find within the Padma Purana that Lord Shiva himself states, he himself says that there are many objects of worship within the material world, but of all personalities, the greatest is Lord Vishnu. And then he says, and even higher than that is the worship of Lord Vishnu's devotee. So, because he is a Vaishnava and engaged in that service, he's very, very dear for the many different services that he performs for Lord Vishnu, and therefore Lord Vishnu is very tolerant, very he's very dear. So we see in this story that Lord Shiva does something because of his being in contact with the modes of material nature. He does something which is very foolish. He gives this unintelligent demon a benediction that anyone whose head he touches will be smashed to thousands of pieces. It's like giving you know, a kid who's not very bright a loaded gun and saying, go and play. Now, if anyone did that sort of thing, they'd be severely culpable, you know. But here, Lord Shiva, he's actually done this, being influenced. But you'll see as we get through, Lord Vishnu, very, you know, you hardly ever read where he will give a very strong chastisement to Lord Shiva. Always very encouraging, because he is so dear. He usually saves Lord Shiva, because in this past time we see this is not the only time that Lord Shiva has got himself in a difficulty due to his contact with the material energy and awarding various benedictions to demoniac persons. One time he awarded the demons, he empowered Maya Dhanava to build a well for the demons so that whenever they died, they could use that water to bring them back to life. And of course that made it almost impossible for them to die, and they tried to take over the heavenly planets as they usually do. But Lord Vishnu saved Shiva because he went and drank that water, and there was none left. We see also that Lord Shiva, he gave a benediction to Lord Ram to make him very, very powerful, and then Ravana, and Ravana again went and grabbed the Kailash mountain and moved it from its base. So again, Lord Vishnu had to go and save Shiva and his abode. So you know, in various circumstances we see that Vishnu is sometimes having to save Lord Shiva from his entanglement due to material influences. What to speak of Lord Shiva's followers? How can they be, you know, how can they not be entangled if Lord Shiva becomes entangled? Sometimes. But, of course, generally, Lord Shiva's situation is that he is situated transcendentally. And he is always meditating upon Lord Sankarshan. So, Lord Shiva, the ultimate conclusion from that we can draw, therefore, is that Lord Shiva derives his importance and position from his relationship with Vishnu. Therefore, what do we see that Lord Shiva wears upon his hair? He wears the Ganges. Within his dreadlocks, you'll see the little fountain there. Lord Shiva is called Gangeshwar because when the Ganges came down from the heavenly planets, and it came down with such a force, it was, you know, it threatened to smash to pieces the earthly planet. Lord Shiva, you know, he captured the Ganges within the locks of his hair. He's so powerful. And he just let it out drip by drip. But he also, he keeps that Ganges within his hair as an emblem that he is always carrying the dust of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu upon his head. Because the Ganges water, of course, came from the hole in the universe when Lord Vamana, who's an incarnation of Vishnu, put his toe through the covering of the universe, and therefore the Ganges water trickled down. So, because he is always worshipping Lord Vishnu, he wears that Ganges within his hair to signify that he is always carrying the dust of Lord Vishnu upon his head, which means that he is always meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And because he is always meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, he is showing his followers that if you actually want to become free from all sinful reactions and attain liberation, you should also meditate upon that person that I'm meditating upon. Where am I? The people are approaching Lord Vishnu, and he is signifying by wearing the Ganges within his hair, where am I deriving my power? Where am I deriving my existence? I am deriving my existence from the Lord who I worship, Vishnu. So Lord Shiva also, he wears different snakes, you know, around his body, and they also represent Lord Sankarshan, because the Lord, the supreme deity of Lord Shiva is Sankarshan, because he also in his Vaishnava feature, he also worships Lord Krishna, but generally he's meditating upon Lord Mahasankarshan. Mahasankarshan, from Mahasankarshan of the Vaikuntha planets, expands as Mahavishnu. And it is from Mahavishnu that he glances at the material energy and impregnates the living entities within the material energy, and also within the pores of his skin, all the universes entering, and as he breathes in and out, all the universes are expanded and then withdrawn. So Mahavishnu, the source of all the material universes, is an expansion of Mahasankarshan, who Lord Shiva meditates upon. So it's very clear, we actually see all the various references that are there and take them in their proper context, that Lord Vishnu is taken as supreme and his devotees, the benefits that they derive are transcendental benefits, because Lord Vishnu is in full consciousness. In the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha, we just mentioned Sankarshan. In the spiritual world there is Narayan, and on the four sides of Narayan, he expands as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna and Aniruddha. In the feature of Mahasankarshan, he expands as Mahavishnu. In his feature as Prajumna, he expands as Kapadaksha Vishnu. In his feature as Aniruddha, he expands as Shiridaksha Vishnu. And in his feature of Vasudev, he represents the pure transcendental consciousness. And those who worship the super soul in all his features come to the Vasudev conception of pure transcendental sudasattva, pure transcendental consciousness with not a trace of material qualities. And in that pure Vasudev platform, sudasattva, pure goodness, beyond the modes, in that platform one can understand the nature of God, and one can understand one's own transcendental nature. So if we have difficulty with the mind, people are generally advised to worship the moon. And the moon god, is actually representing Aniruddha, the incarnation of Aniruddha, who manifests as the super soul of all living entities. If by controlling the mind, then one can appreciate the platform of intelligence And if one wants to be fixed in one's intelligence, one worships Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, he is a representative of Pradyumna, who is the super soul of Lord Brahma. When one's mind and intelligence are thus fixed, and one wants to become completely free from false ego, one may worship Lord Shiva to become free from false ego. And Lord Shiva is a representative of Mahasankarsana. And when one becomes free from false ego, one can actually elevate oneself to the Vasudeva platform of pure transcendental consciousness. And on that platform, one can understand the science of God. So these things are all very clearly described in the Vedic literature. And this story of the Srimad Bhagavatam very clearly illustrates the difference between Lord Vishnu, who is always in the supreme position, and Lord Shiva, his representative, who is always in the subordinate position. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any comments or questions.
I have one comment. Thank you very much for a very nice and wonderful lecture. Profound knowledge, study, has been so good. I just wanted to, my question is, what is the origin of false ego? Where did it rise
from? Okay. Lord Shiva is the embodiment of false ego in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So he is the very embodiment. In its pure form, ego is represented by Sankarsana. That is pure spiritual identity. That is reflected in the material world as ego covered by material identity. And the predominating deity of that materially covered ego is Lord Shiva in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So ultimately, ego in its pure form is the predominating deity is Mahasankarsana.
Can I ask another way? Because maybe I didn't put my question properly. In Pradhan, there is no false ego. Only when it becomes the Mahatattva, the false ego comes. Is that right?
Yes.
So, where does the false ego arise? What is the source of false ego?
Because there's no ego in the Pradhan, because it's not manifested. There are no living entities.
That's right. Yeah. Well, not here.
The living entities are not there, and also in the very beginning, Vishnu is also has not entered.
Yeah, there's no glance.
There's no glance. Mahavishnu has not glanced upon the material energy. He has not entered. And it's described that the material energy, the pradhan, is actually a product of the causal ocean. Mahavishnu glances at the material energy, and the that glance manifests as Sambhu, one of the original features of Lord Shiva. In when it is in touch with the material energy. So then you have consciousness in the form of Sambhu, that is touched with the material energy, which gives a coloured consciousness or false ego. And through Lord Shiva, all the living entities are actually impregnated into the material energy, and they also, their consciousness becomes touched by the material energy, and according to their previous desire and deserve, they develop false ego and the modes of goodness, passion or ignorance. So you know, when the living entity contacts the material energy, then that is ripe for the manifestation of false ego or false identity. Otherwise, who is identifying? No one is there to identify wrongly or rightly.
Can you say that the new false ego is coming from Lord Shiva?
Yes, yes, you can.
But then why are we worshipping Lord Shiva?
Why?
Remove the
What's that?
Why are we worshipping Lord Shiva? You say anything?
Yeah. See, Lord Shiva, he is different from the jivas in that the jivas are forced to take birth within the material energy in different situations. Lord Shiva voluntarily accepts that position as a service, and he is in control, the master of the material energy. That's a big difference. he is actually the master of Durga, of the material energy, and he voluntarily accepts that association as a service to the Lord. And he always remembers his position as the eternal servant of the Lord. So he's not influenced by false ego, but sometimes, due to contact with the material energy, there is some bewilderment. But generally, mostly, he is in his position fully, you know, not under the position of being in false ego, but remembering that he is a servant of the Lord, and he is placing all the living entities within the material energy, and one of his jobs is to remind them, you know, that they are not a product of the material energy, but they are also, like him, an eternal servant of Krishna. So we worship him to remember that we are the servant of God. It's described that the spiritual master is a representative of all the demigods. Therefore, when we see the spiritual master, we immediately remember that we're the servant of God. So he is also, the spiritual master is representing Lord Shiva in that sense, that when we see the spiritual master, just like we see Srila Prabhupada sitting there on the Vyasasam, and you look at Srila Prabhupada and you immediately remember, oh yes, I am the servant of God. It's almost impossible to look at Srila Prabhupada and not remember that I'm the servant of God. Also, in a sense, Srila Prabhupada is also representing the good intelligence coming from Lord Brahma, the head of our Sampradaya, who distributed Vedic knowledge. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is representing Lord Brahma in the sense that he is fixing our intelligence. He is representing the Super Soul. He is giving us nice brisharam, chanting of Hare Krishna, nice association, and this way our minds become very peaceful, and therefore he is representing all the various demigods. So the spiritual master is the sum total of all the demigods. And but yeah, look, we worship Lord. We can worship Lord Shiva to become free from the material energy, but we don't have to separately offer worship to Lord Shiva. And we, you know, Vaishnavas sometimes worship Lord Shiva and sometimes they don't. For them it's not a regulative principle that they must. They're always respectful. A Vaishnava is respectful even to an ant, what to speak of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, who's not different from Vishnu. But it's not a regulative principle, and they generally don't, because it can misguide people. If we're seen to be always worshipping Lord Shiva, as I said, others will definitely take it in the wrong way. Better worship the spiritual master, the Vaishnava spiritual master in the form of Srila Prabhupada, his representatives. That is a regulative principle. The same benefit is there, because all the demigods are fully represented in the personality of the spiritual master. Mm. Yeah. This is the pastime of Brikashura, where Brikashura excuse me, gets a benediction from Lord Shiva that anyone's head he touches will smash to 1,000 pieces. And what happens is that the first one he wants to test that upon is Lord Shiva himself, and Vishnu has to save him. So it's a very amusing story. But these three verses that we just read are the essence of the chapter.
Who was Bhasmasur then?
Who?
Bhasmasur, who wanted to use the benediction of Shiva against him.
Bhasmasura or Banasura?
No, I heard, maybe I heard in this correct, Bhasmasur, that one who can, Bhasam means like vanish.
I'm not sure.
Maybe the past time is the same, that, but the name I heard was different.
Sometimes the same person may have slightly different names.
I think Bhasmasura is different. This is Brikashura.
Brikashura.
Who was Bhasmasura?
Some demon.
That's what it is. It's a different past time. It's almost same.
Almost same, yeah. Any other questions? Yep. Okay.
I heard a thing the other day that Lord Brahma is not honored or worshipped throughout India, except in Rajasthan. He was cursed by someone. I wanted to know, is it true, or who cursed him?
Brahma has received some censures from various sages. At the very beginning of creation, when he manifested various living entities, he became attracted to his own daughter, and therefore the sages recommended that he actually give up that body. So he actually gave up that body. So there are different pastimes where, yes, Lord Brahma also becomes, but as you see, Lord Shiva becomes entangled due to his contact with the material energy, but the Shivites don't want to remember that. But if Lord Brahma does the same, oh, we won't worship him. Apart from Vishnu Tattva, everyone else becomes entangled. They're all dependent for their liberation on Vishnu. It is, they will falsely criticize. If they want to criticize Lord Brahma like that, then the same should apply to Lord Shiva. But they shouldn't criticize either. You should never criticize someone who's, you know, even if a very, very exalted person does commit some activity which is, you know, not recommended, we should never, ever criticize them, you know, because 99.9% their activities are glorious. And if there's one little spot and we dare to criticize them, it's very offensive. Within a mountain of glories, we find one little defect. We should not meditate upon that. So, you know, Lord Brahma, who actually engineered this universe on behalf of the Supreme Lord, and manages all the living entities, it is an extremely important managerial position given to someone who is perhaps the most qualified living entity within the material universe. To criticize them for the odd mistake is extremely wrong. But actually, sometimes Lord Brahma, they're not all as elevated as each other. Our Lord Brahma, in this particular universe, the Lord Brahma became a 100% pure devotee. And therefore, even though perhaps way, way, way at the beginning, he wasn't in that position of a 100% pure devotee, he was a mixed devotee with some material desires and made some mistakes. But at this point, Lord Brahma is a pure devotee. And therefore, whatever is in the past should be forgotten. It's, you know, what is he doing now? So, you know, what happens is that because people do not have a thorough understanding of the history and the Vedic literatures, they pick and choose one or two things that suits their philosophy without understanding that now Brahma is, you know, most exalted Vaishnav, plus, you know, the secondary creator of the universe, he is certainly worshipable. And because he has this Vaishnav Sampradaya, which we are in, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that that is most worthy that I shall appear and appear within the Brahma Sampradaya, then that is even more glorification for Lord Brahma. So there is certainly no stance. If they want to offer that criticism, they should offer the same criticism to Shiva and every other demigod that they're worshipping.
Are you referring to Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya?
Sorry?
Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, you're referring? Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya?
Yeah, well, this is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Yeah.
So it is true there's only one place where Lord Brahma is actually worshipped, that's in Rajasthan.
No. Brahma is worshipped all over India. For instance, we're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava. All Vaishnavas, whether they're in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, Vishnu Swami, the Ramanuja Sampradaya stems from Lakshmi, Sri. The Vishnu Swami Sampradaya stems from Lord Vishnu, Shiva. The Brahma Madhva Sampradaya stems from Brahma, and the Nimbarka Sampradaya stems from the four Kumaras. All of them within all those four Sampradayas, even though they have a different leader, they still respect Lord Brahma. You'll probably find that those who are disrespecting Lord Brahma perhaps, you know, those who are not in any of those Sampradayas, and perhaps they may be Shivites or what have you, trying to make some, you know, inappropriate comments. Yeah. But, see, all Vaishnavas, as I said, all Vaishnavas, they're respectful to all living entities, even an ant. How could, you know, who in their right mind, who is a Vaishnava, could possibly disrespect Lord Brahma when their philosophy is that they should be respectful to all living entities? So you have to, what is the quality of that person who is disrespectful like that? No, Lord Brahma is worshipped all over. Yeah. Yeah. Especially within the Vaishnava tradition. Yeah. But as far as deities of Lord Brahma, yeah, there may not be a lot of, because generally Brahma is not Vishnu Tattva. See, that's why you can worship Lord Shiva, because he's Vishnu Tattva. Brahma is Jiva Tattva. Sometimes, if there is not a qualified, so it's not because he has some fault that he's not being worshipped, it's because he's Jiva Tattva. Sometimes when there is not a qualified Lord Brahma, Vishnu himself will actually appear as Lord Brahma. And in that case, he's actually Vishnu Tattva and can be worshipped in a deity form. Sometimes Lord Shiva, when he is unavailable, a jiva will actually take that position as, you know, the jiva in contact with material energy. In which case, he probably shouldn't be worshipped. Okay? Jai Ogo Shukrava.